I agree. Some old faces. I do. Well, I was thinking it's amazing how other people are looking older. Yeah, right. I mean, I'm still feeling my 36-ness, which was my age when I first started sitting here. I was sitting over right over there as second seat inside the door there. And it was a transitional time in my life, and I had no idea whether I could even sit for 40 minutes. You know, my brother-in-law brought me. Anyway, I did. It was pretty good. So, I'm 70 now, and it's been a while, you know. I go through phases of coming in, going out. You know, what's all this about? But I think basically, Buddhism is it's a way of living, and it you know, we all have our take on life. We all want to be happy. Dalai Lama, he says that's a fundamental point here. Everyone wants to be happy, no matter what country they're from, what color skin they are, or whatever. The issue is we all have our takes on that. You know, we all working toward that, you know, happiness. And even religion sometimes can be part of that scheme, you know, like, well, maybe I can find happiness here. So we're always looking for it. It's always out there. So that works pretty good. I mean, we're really programmed that way. I mean, we're all kind of trying to get it. And you know, hi, come on in. You know, we try to insure ourselves, and anyway, things go pretty good if things are going our way. But just this past week, I had a really good example. Like, where's happiness when things aren't necessarily going our way? You know, how do you kind of stand up in things where they are, not necessarily where you'd like them to be? So this past week, I've been practicing with an old Minnesota Zen Center member. Her name is Jikan Paula Kondrick. So she's been down in Iowa there with me for almost 15 years. And she was one of the original founders. There were, you know, like a handful of people, maybe 12 or 15 people, who invited Katagiri Roshi to come here from the San Francisco Zen Center when Suzuki Roshi, who founded the San Francisco Zen Center, needed an assistant. Do you know that story? You know, originally, Suzuki Roshi was there for a Japanese community at a temple called Sokoji. And then that was right near Haight-Ashbury. And a lot of old hippies like Guy. Karen. started coming there, you know, and And the older Japanese folks say, "Oh, those dirty hippies, they're long hair and no shoes." And anyway, so then that started the San Francisco Zen Center. So that grew and really took off. And then Katagiri Roshi was a young monk and out there on the West Coast, and Suzuki Roshi asked him to assist, and so he came here. There were like 10, 12 people who brought him here in Minneapolis. And within 5 years of his being here, he came 1973, and I started sitting here in 1976. They first were over by the university in a fourplex, and then they came here. And Bob Persig, person who wrote, you know, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, that book's been out there for a long time. From the royalties of that book, they bought this building. So that's a long history. And and this Qigong, Paula Kondrick, she was a quiet member. She was a single mom and had three kids. She wanted to be ordained, but Katagiri Roshi told her, "Take care of your family there first." And then Katagiri Roshi died in 1990. So she never really was able to be ordained. So then I went to Japan around that time when Katagiri Roshi died. He suggested, "What about going to Japan for a year?" he said. And I said, "Oh, that'd be great, but I don't know any Japanese." But he said, "Don't worry." This is a Shaggy Dog story here a little bit, but just bear with me. So anyway, so I went first year. Second year, came back, and he really had cancer then. And but he said, 2 years. But I was ready for that, you know. And then later he said, "Well, no, if we want to just go 1 year, that's fine." But 2 years was great, and I ended up staying third year. I came back and then wanted to establish monastery, because in 1978, Minnesota Zen Center bought 280 acres of land in southeast Minnesota. That was 5 years after that little group of 12 people or so brought Katagiri Roshi here. So what was that about? Why in 5 years this little fledgling group bought 280 acres of land in southeast Minnesota? If you look on page 115 of Katagiri Roshi's first book there, Returning to Silence, he says there, sooner or later, he says, "I want to build a monastery." So what's that about? That's what I want to talk about this morning. Because this is monastery also. You sat for 40 minutes this morning, most of you. That 40 minutes is like mini monastery, in a way. Since I came back from Japan, I've been working toward that idea, that goal of establishing monastery in Midwest here. Anyway, this person, Jikan Kondrick, came then and said, "Shokan, I'd like to practice with you." And she's 82 now. And so we practiced there 15 years. And then she always had asthma. And so last week, she really had a bad thing with the asthma. And I said, "Boy, I think you should really go to the doctor." And she says, "No, I know I don't have pneumonia, you know." But she went to the doctor, and she had pneumonia. So that was 2 weeks ago now. And she was 3 days in the hospital, and finally, you know, they got a handle on it. And then she came back, and her daughter from up here in Minneapolis came down there to Iowa, where we are. And her daughter took one look at her, and she says, "Ma, it's time." So she had been checking out, like, assisted living quarters up here. Anyway, this Tuesday, or Wednesday, she'll move up here back to Minneapolis. So, this is you and me. It's not just her. There's going to be a point at which, if we make it that long, when we get run over by a car out here, or earthquake can shake us to pieces. But sooner or later, we try to control life. We try to kind of work it out so we're, you know, got everything and things are good, you know. But where is good? You can never totally control that, because life has its own rhythm. It's got its own pulse. We too will face our children saying, "Pa or Ma, it's time." So there's always that feeling. I remember with my own dad, when he went to a retirement home, it's like he felt like life was over. You know, like you had to let go of your house, let go of your old neighborhood, let go of your friends. Where's joy? Where's peace in that? Where's joy and peace? The Dalai Lama, I went to he gave a 4-day seminar there in Madison 2 summers ago. And there's one point in the conference there, he says, "You know, one thing's for sure." And there were like 3,000 people there in the Alliance Center in Madison. And you could hear a pin drop. And then he said, "What's the one thing for sure?" I mean, everybody was saying that, you know, to themselves. But so he says, "In 100 years, we'll all be dead." And there were little kids playing in the aisles and all that. It's true. In 100 years, we will all be dead. I'll be dead. You'll be dead. Again, where's joy or peace about that? So this was the Buddha's teaching here. For human beings, where is the, you know, where is the release or nirvana? Nirvana means cessation of that trying to grab peace or trying to grab happiness, trying to get it. So that quality is, can you be alive in moment, wherever moments are, beyond your control or non-control of it? Jikan-san, she did not have control. She tries her best to take care of her asthma, but it was starting to, it caught, you know, it was catching up with her to the point that she'll be driving here to Minneapolis the same day I'll be going back on Tuesday to Northeast Iowa. We'll pass on the road. And I thought, wow, you know, this is really life turning in a way that we don't, you know, really plan on it. So that's happening constantly, because universe turns, you know, it's really beyond you and me. You know, it's like I have my take on universe. You know, like what will bring me happiness. But universe says, "I see you, Shokin. That's good. You know, you should have your wishes as much as possible. But actually, there's about 5 billion other people who also have wishes, so I have to take care of them too, you know. And so the universe is turning. And not only that, we got this planet, you know, that you guys are smoking to death, you know. I mean, literally to death. So, you know, it's all turning, and it's all interwoven, interrelated. In Buddhism, they use this phrase, all is one. It's not philosophical. It's real. It's, you know, life is interdynamic working. It's all interwoven, interconnected. It's not just my take on thing or my ability to control everything. You know, it's like you're not God, you know, and it's you're not, you know, we're not Santa Claus either, you know. It's life has its own rhythm. So that quality is, how do we stand up in life as it is? That, I think, is our koan, so to speak. How do we stand up in our 80s? How do we stand up in our diagnosis with cancer or whatever? How do we stand up, you know, when your lover or your friend walks out on you? How do you stand up when, you know, your business deals don't work out the way you wanted them to? Life happens. It moves, you know. We all want to try to shape it, and we feel kind of unhappy sometimes, you know. We all feel that sometimes, because everything doesn't necessarily come our way with confetti and, you know, champagne popping all the time. So, where is peace? Where is happiness? So that quality, I think, and we all have to research this ourselves, is, can we stand up in moment as it is? That, you just did, most of you did 40 minutes of Zazen. Zazen, or sitting meditation, we call it, it's not to get something. We all sit to get something, actually. You know, peace or strength, or I really touched that when I sat in that seat over there. You know, my world was really spinning at that time. So it was really great to touch a quiet place in myself and feel some inner strength. I had to stand up in, you know, my situation. But Zazen, true Zazen, is if you try to grab for that, you can grab for a lot of things that maybe will give you some release or some feeling of connection to yourself. True Zazen is bring yourself to moment. That's our business. Bring ourselves to moment. You know, we always want to attach to that and say, well, what am I getting out of it? So what are you getting out of having cancer? You're not getting anything out of having cancer. You know, so that philosophy, what am I getting out of it, is not really a door toward happiness. The door toward happiness, I think, is the vow to embrace all life, which means to stand up in moment, whatever moment is manifesting itself beyond my like or dislike. Take care of this moment, this time. Be alive there. That 39th, 40th minute of sitting Zazen can be pretty hard on, you know, the old rear end and the legs. But can you just take care of moment? That way of living is think. I don't know. I keep researching this. I keep thinking there must be an easier way. You know, like maybe Aruba. You know. But, you know, if somebody had a ticket to Aruba, I would go, you know. But listen here just for a second. Are you okay? Are we all right so far? We're traveling together here, okay? This is Zen Master Dogen here, and he wrote 97 fascicles that were brought together in a work called the Shobo Genzo. And one of those fascicles is called Continuous Practice, or Gyoji. Dogen was a 13th century monk who went to China, and he's considered the person, you know, who transmitted Soto Zen lineage from China to Japan. Okay? And then, of course, it came from India, right? We all pretty well know that, I think. You know, so 28 ancestors in India, and that 28th ancestor came to China. We call that ancestor, that person's name was Bodhidharma. So that was the first ancestor in China. So 52 generations later, I mean altogether, Dogen was 52nd generation. That transmission came to Japan. Katagiri Roshi was 81st generation from the Buddha. He came to this country. So I am first generation after, you know, the 14 people he ordained. Seven women, seven men. So that lineage, Dogen transmitted, you know, to Japan. So this is 13th century. He's talking to monks deep in the mountains of Japan. He had this to say about what we're talking about. He says, "Do not just go about willy-nilly as if blown about by the east wind or west wind. We all do, right? East wind, west wind, you know, oh, it's so cold, God, you know, when's spring going to come, you know, especially if you live in Minnesota, you know, and so we're blown by that, you know, and we're blown by this and by that, you know, and we scramble to, you know, make the good life, you know, that's good, I do it too, you know, we all do it, but Dogen says, he does it too, you know, but he says, do not go about willy-nilly as if blown about by the east wind or west wind. He's talking to eight monks that practice with him there at Aheiji in the deep mountains of Japan, which are very deep in snow. I've been there. We are about five people right now during this winter ango in northeast Iowa. We've got about 7 or 8 inches of snow. Of course, we got a little ice too, you know. It's all over the place. But he says, do not be blown about willy-nilly by east or west wind. Five people. We are 18 miles from a town. Our address is Dorchester, Iowa. That is 6 miles. You know what's in Dorchester? A bar. a post office which has been closed, but they still send mail with that address. A restaurant that's been closed. An old Catholic church, a beautiful old Catholic church that has no pastor anymore, but a pastor, somebody comes on Sunday. No stores. That's it. I went into that bar one time. I was saying I should be a good boy here, so I just went in at lunchtime and I asked him if he had a cup of coffee. And I wanted to check out the bar. I mean, just to see what kind of place this was. This is my town, right? 6 miles from the monastery. It could be, you know, rough times, you know, but... But anyway, still, so I went there. He says, "We don't have coffee." It was a rough-looking place. It is a rough-looking place. I could tell you a few stories. But that was the only time I went. But since then, that barkeeper has referred many people to Rumanji who are lost because they don't know how to find our place. It's not even on Google Earth. So we are deep in the mountains. This is like Dogen. He was very deep in the mountains. 8 monks. He tells them, do not go about willy-nilly as if blown by east wind or west wind. Where could they go? But we go lots of places in our head. We create lots of stories, and we can get very depressed, and we can get very angry, and we can get very high and ecstatic about when everything goes my way. But Dogen says, ease up, man, ease up, woman. You know, because life has its own rhythm and its own winds. Watch that. Just take care of day to day. It doesn't mean you can't have joy or enjoy anything. Zen's not, you know, puritanical ism, you know. And then he says, watch this. He says, if you possess the merit of continuous practice, of not leaving the monastery for 5 or 10 years, to the extent that you do not even notice the spring breezes or autumn moon, you will be emancipated from the spring breezes and autumn moon. Let me explain this one a little bit. If you have the merit of not leaving the monastery for 5 or 10 years. He was talking literally. The monastery that I was at really recommended 5 or 10 years. I stayed 3 years. Katagiri Roshi stayed 3 years at this Aheiji monastery where Dogen was. This Narazaki Ikkō Roshi says 5 or 10 years. He was quoting Dogen. That quality, I can say for 3 years, is like there's no running to town, you know, even to Dorchester. You know, it's just take care of this moment, this time. You do it 40 minutes. You know, I did for 10, 15 years, no monastery. Just come to this room and came once a week, sometimes 4 or 5 times a week. Because I realized I needed to just stand up in my life where it was. That quality is to be alive. Katagiri Roshi says to be a leaping fish, to be alive in your life. We say these are hard times. They are hard times. There are a lot of people unemployed. And it might be some of you as well. But it's the poor people in this country, many of them, that... Anyway, it is hard times. you know. But can you be, you know, where is the leaping fish to be alive in moment? That quality is bring yourself to moment. It's no panacea, you know. Hard is hard. But can we still bring yourself to moment? There were times when I was there in that monastery, I felt so alone. I could not speak Japanese. I was there alone, even though there were monks around me. I didn't know half the time what was going on. You know, there were 40 monks at this main monastery. I'd always be asking them, what's next? Sugi? I learned a few phrases. And then they might tell me, but it'd be in Japanese, you know. So I just had to learn to follow, like, just have antenna. Be alive on my feet. And I was determined to be alive on my feet and do whatever they were doing. It was really good. I grew a lot to just take care of moment at hand. That quality, I think, is really in Zazen that you do, like for 40 minutes. And even if you never come back and never sit Zazen, be alive in your life, wherever you are. We're all caught. You're caught by parenting. You know, you have children for 20-some years. Well, could be for 40 years. But, you know, it's like... Okay, then he says, if you can be alive there, you don't have to be, what did he say here? He said, do not even notice the spring breezes or autumn moon. You notice the spring breezes or autumn moon, but you don't have to be caught by them. One way or the other, even if cold breezes blow, you know, in the autumn. He says, you will be emancipated from the spring breezes and autumn moon. It's really true, I think. I mean, I feel I am deep in winter down there. I mean, it is icy around there. But you just do. You just take care where you are. If you travel with somebody, you want to travel with somebody who can travel. If you travel with somebody who's always pissing and moaning about this kind of situation or that kind of situation, that's kind of a rough traveling partner. So that quality, we know, is a pretty nice quality if a person can just take care of whatever's coming down the pike. Who does that gracefully? Nobody does it gracefully. Kadagiri Roshi says equanimity includes non-equanimity. You know, we all get, you know, tossed off our center, so to speak. But can you bring it back and stand up and take care of day to day? Can I? I don't know. Things, by and large, have gone pretty good in my life. How will I be when I'm like Jikan Khandri? You know, saying, it's time, Shogun. You need to check yourself in. Please come and visit me. Jikan-san, she always says, you just wait, Shogun. I'm just 12 years ahead of you. You know, you're going to be the same place I am in 12 years, you know. It's been good. Here I am. She said that when I was in my 60s, you know. So. All right. I know you're getting bored, so I want to wind up here. So here's the last part here. Dogen says, the realm of this continuous practice is unknown by us, and we do not understand it. Like, who does that? What he's saying. These were new monks there. He said, this present moment of continuous practice should be engraved on your hearts as something greatly prized. Do not think that this silence is useless and empty. You know, it's not. You know, that silence, you grow in that silence. You grow in taking care of where you are. That's a silent activity. Because in that moment, there's nothing to say. You just have to clean that diaper. That's what's in front of you. So that quality, we grow in that. You know, taking care of where, whatever our situation is. So he says, do not think that this silence is useless and empty. Then he says, entering monastery and doing zazen in silence, or leaving the monastery, or you could say Zen center, and going all about, even if you leave and never come back, he says, all that is still, both are the form of continuous practice of the monastery. Hang on a second. This continuous practice of not leaving the monastery is the realm of freedom from conditions, in the same way that the sky is free from the tracks of flying birds. It is a realm where one is completely one with the whole universe. The whole universe is the monastery. So that point is, I think it's really good. Where is the monastery? Monastery is here. Monastery is where I'm at. But I told Jikan San, you know, the whole world's the monastery. You're just changing monasteries. She got it, you know, and her attitude toward this move in her life, it's very good. You know, I can really feel her stability and her saying yes to, she's very matter of fact in many ways. So where is monastery? Your life is monastery. Even though you think your life is boring, or you're just living in an apartment by yourself, or you know, you've got a job checking out groceries at Lund's, that's your monastery. Do you treat it like monastery? Or are you just throwing, you know, the groceries in the bag and wishing you were out of there? Whatever your situation is, you know, if you embrace your situation as monastery, we are all called to be monks of the universe. We are interwoven and intertwined with universe. We are the stewards of the earth and the universe. Can we be alive there? There's a whole chapter in Kegir Roshi. This is his second book here called You Have to Say Something. There's a chapter in there called Living in the Universal Marketplace. He's saying that point. We all are alive in universe. So, you know, can you... Like that, where is monastery? Monastery is universe. We're all called to be monks of universe, I think. It means to be stewards of the earth and of our community, in our communities, wherever you are. There is no mundane place. That's what I've been operating out of these last 30 years, that kind of way of thinking. And I hope I can be alive on my feet in my 80s, as I am, as I'm entering my 70s. But we don't know. We'll see. The issue is, how do you approach, how do you deal with your life? Can you quiet your mind and stand up where you are? It's easy to talk about Buddhism, but can you live it? Can you be monk of universe? That quality you know, we should all bring, because it's a human, great human quality. You know, it is the way of the Buddha way, or the enlightened way, as we say. Anyway, excuse me for rattling on here, so if you have any questions or comments, we could talk for 3 minutes. Is that all right? three minutes? Okay, 2.5. Yes.
I wonder if you would talk about being compelled to start this monastery and remaining in the just this moment in the process of making a plan.
Right. So making a plan is we should make a plan thoroughly. We should really look at it and think about all the factors. How are you going to support this thing? You know, it's one thing to have ideas about things, but, you know, and structurally, is it going to stand? But to build anything, still, you have to come back to emptying the garbage. You know, like, you have to come back to day to day. You know, let's take it a day at a time. You know, AA, they talk about day at a time. You know, it's good philosophy. It's a monk named Rinzai. He says, now, this is another story, but they planted pine trees to beautify the temple. But will they beautify the temple? And the teacher asked Rinzai, and Rinzai just tapped the ground 3 times with his hole. What was that? Those are these koans, you know. This one means, you know, I don't know, but let's just tap the ground 3 times with our hole. Like, let's just cultivate our idea, you know, and nourish it and do our best to move toward it. And then let's see what happens. If we attach too strongly to it, we'll be completely bent out of shape if it doesn't happen. You know? But that doesn't mean we shouldn't row the boat and use the tiller, you know, to get to the other side. So that's, I think, our practice to, you know, we don't know outcome, and to attach to it is a form of suffering, you know. But we should have an idea where we're going. But that idea also may shift, you know, as situations kind of come up.
Could you say something about practice opportunities?
We, you know, in the Buddha's time, they did a winter and summer angle. So we do a 1 month winter angle, and right now a 2 month summer angle. So hopefully we want to move to 3 month, 3 month. That's how monasteries in Japan, they do a. And also we do a weekend sesshin. Weekend sesshin every month, third weekend of every month. And then we do a regular Sunday morning like you have here for local community. We have 4 or 5 people come. Dogen says, do not measure 4 or 5 or 40 or 50. Even 4 or 5 might be great. So it's that kind of regular. And ango is, we translate it as practice period. But where is practice? Practice is your whole life. It's not sitting on a zafu necessarily. So I'm not sure about that. The literal translation of ango is dwelling in one place in peace and harmony. So that quality for 1 month, just dwell in that one place, in peace and harmony with what's happening, with the other people, with the situation there. Be alive in that space, you know, for that length of time. There's no real escape exactly. You can try to escape. People drink a lot of coffee, you know, and but still, even if you're tanked up with coffee, you know, I mean, okay, tea, you know, you're all into tea, you Zen folks, you know. That green tea, you know, has a little... but still, you're still caught, actually. Can you be alive there? So that's our schedule. Okay, thank you. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. Yes.
My question is related to that. I wonder if you ever, in the sitting thought, that you might be a plant, if you ever felt closer to a plant.
There you go. Let the plant bloom. That's a very nice metaphor. In fact, in Buddhist literature, they say we should bloom like a lotus in muddy water. So lotus is a very beautiful flower. But lotus, where does the lotus bloom? It doesn't bloom in a bathtub, you know, with clean water, clear water. Lotus blooms in muddy water. So can we all bloom in our life, wherever it is? That's kind of a call, so to speak. But no, I like that. That's a great one. And seed too, you know, like nourish the seed, let the seed blossom. Anyway, thank you. It's nice to see everybody, and let's enjoy these winter days. Winter holds spring in its heart, so thank you very much.